Good morning, Tim. Firstly, I don't want your listeners to believe a word that I say. I want them to go out and research themselves and prove the validity of this for themselves. Absolutely horrendous. But my point is, and the question that I'd put to all of your listeners is, can this new jurisdiction be lawful if a counterfeit flag is lowered and the original jurisdiction of King William the Fourth proclaiming us to be an independent nation was not lowered, and indeed has never been lowered, and still flies at the Upper Marae, at Waitangi? And the answer, internationally, under law, is no. Cannot be. A counterfeit flag, you can lower anything you like, but you cannot usurp the original 1835 independence flag.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
In the studio this morning, I have Dan Hermanson. And he's a researcher here in New Zealand. In particular, he has recently been looking at the historical record that happened since the European first set foot in New Zealand. And I want to say kia ora, Dan.
Kia ora.
Good to hear you and good to see you.
Always good to see you, Tim.
Thank you. Now, once upon a time, we can look back at Aotearoa, now New Zealand. Up until the early 16th century, there had been no record of any European landing on these shores. The Maori were domiciled here, and yet we know we found the odd wreckage of ships on the Northland coast that had sunk maybe 100 years, possibly. They could have been Spanish ships, maybe Portuguese as well. And our history actually goes way, way, way back. That's another time. But really, it wasn't until 1642, until Abel Tasman from Holland, the Netherlands, landed in Golden Bay. Regrettably, there was a skirmish and he left. And then in 1679, Captain Cook came from the opposite direction up in the East Cape, where he first met Maori. And from then on, after allowing the world at large to recognise that there was a landmass here, then came the whalers, the sealers from the Northern Hemisphere, the people who wanted flax. And from then on, things changed radically. And we had disease, gunpowder, booze, all sorts of things. Dan, so this is a story that I think needs to be told in a new context.
I agree. I think we'll start with the premise that most New Zealanders understand, and that is that the Treaty of Waitangi is our founding document. And I would like to say that that is absolutely incorrect, and I hope your listeners don't turn off at that point. But I'd like to make you aware that the Treaty of Waitangi is an agreement of cessation of hostilities between the native indigenous population and a foreign colonizing power, which was called Colonial House. So the Treaty of Waitangi was signed in 1840. Now, my question is, and it was those Maori wars that led to the necessity of having a treaty in the first instance. Now, my question is, what were we as a nation prior to 1840? Anyone got any idea?
Well, this comes right back to this particular signing in 1835.
Okay.
And a new flag was raised.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me.
Okay, tell us.
There's a flag before the Treaty of Waitangi? Okay, it goes back to the prior monarch. In 1835, the reigning monarch was King William the Fourth. He saw that he had subjects down here running amok and couldn't do anything about it because he had no jurisdiction in what was called New Tirini, the new territory. So it was actually earlier than that, it was in 1834. He had Busby, the same guy that did the Treaty of Waitangi.
James Busby.
James Busby. And he offered the Maori chiefs the protection of the British monarch and our independence. It is the only time in the history of the planet that any monarch has ever offered the indigenous people of any land their independent nationhood. Never done before. Amazing thing. King William IV, he was the guy that abolished slavery.
He was also involved in eliminating or curtailing a lot of child labour.
That's right.
And also...
brought in the poor law.
The poor law, that's right. Mm-hmm. So he was, in many ways, had a benevolent heart.
Oh, amazing guy. Now, King William also saw that New Zealand, the new territory, New Tauranga, was a blessed land because he saw that New Zealand is the only island, the only piece of land on the entire face of the earth that has never had any snakes. And he saw that as, I don't know, some sort of blessing or...
Yes, it was a very unique find in the world, which is a pretty tough world at many levels, but no snakes.
Mm. So what he did was he offered the Maori chiefs a choice of three flags. And the Maori chiefs chose a flag. And Busby created what was called the Declaration of Independence for New Zealand. And in 1834, this went back over to the Maoris, chose the flag, and this was shipped back to Britain, and that flag then became royally proclaimed. And it's the one and only of all of the New Zealand flags that was ever royally proclaimed. So then that was shipped back to New Zealand, and the Maori chiefs signed the Declaration of Independence, and the chief's chosen, royally proclaimed flag was risen on the 28th of October, 1835.
So the story is that New Zealand's first official flag was the flag of the United Tribes, and it was selected on the 20th of March, 1834, by 25 chiefs. That means rangitira and ariki, the most noble. And these were from the far north, who with their followers had gathered at Waitangi in the Bay of Islands, and also missionaries, settlers, and the commanders of 13 ships were also present. And the official British resident was James Busby. He made the speech and then asked each chief to come forward and turn and select a flag from three possibilities. But the interesting thing was that when Busby declared the chosen flag the national flag of New Zealand and had it hoisted on a flagpole to a 21-gun salute from HMS Alligator. Yeah, interesting. So there was obviously quite a to-do around that, wasn't there?
Yeah, for sure.
And can you tell me, everyone's wanting to know, tell us about the makeup of this flag.
I will. Now, just before I do that, people may not understand the importance of a flag. A flag is what heralds jurisdiction. So prior to the flag being raised, there was no jurisdiction in this nation. So when that flag rose, all of a sudden, the jurisdiction of the Declaration of Independence came into play internationally, and we were internationally then recognized for the first time as an independent sovereign nation, bowing to no foreign power. Okay? It was the king's wish that we wrote our own laws, found our own ways, and he wanted to keep the snakes out, if you get my drift. So can I just explain a basic difference in what I'm talking about here? When you are talking about the monarch, you're talking about a created being of flesh and blood. They are born and they die. Now, sitting on the head of the reigning monarch is the crown, and this is a corporate entity. It's a dead entity, and it runs through time, and it is the mechanism of governance that is used by successive reigning monarchs. So at that time it was called, well, okay, so we got the difference. So we have the royal monarch, the ruling monarch, and then we have the corporation. It's known as the crown, the city. In the time of Victoria, it was called Colonial House. It's also the East India Trading Company. It's got lots of little names. It's also called the Queen of Right, which is not the physical blood and bones of the ruling monarch. It's a corporation. The Queen of Right is not the ruling monarch. Just as a side note here, many people in New Zealand are very, very concerned about the powers of the police, the powers of the military order we're under at the moment. Now, just want to bring you back to the oath that the police of New Zealand swear. It's not to the corporation. It's sworn to the sovereign lady in the police. So they are not a servant of the corporation. They are in service to the royal sovereign. And she has sworn an oath to defend us.
So this is Queen Elizabeth?
Yes, is the current ruling monarch, Queen Elizabeth II.
Okay, and if Charles happened to be come to become king, it would then be the royal man?
I would imagine. Okay, so let's go back to the raising of the flag. Fair enough?
Yes, certainly.
Okay, so the chief's chosen flag was royally proclaimed flag rose, and at that moment we became, for the first time in history, a nation unto ourselves, answerable to nobody. We were made an independent nation. Okay, so then a year later the king died and the corporation saw its opportunity. So at that time, Queen Victoria, the young Victoria, became the new monarch. And she was a young girl and she was busy making 9 babies with Albert, and she was otherwise distracted. So the corporation saw its opportunity to come and gain its corporate power over the new territory. Okay? Meanwhile, immigrants still poured into the country. So much disease, murder, deceit, corruption.
Land grabs,
everything. Now, then the Maori chiefs were offered a treaty agreement where they, in effect, became a subservient partner with a colonising power, and in effect we became a slave to a master. And the way they did that, they had to be able to lower the king's flag and raise the Union Jack. So Busby created the Treaty of Waitangi and translated it into Maori, and the chiefs signed it, and the Union Jack was risen. And that happened in 1840.
6th of February.
5 years after we were already an independent nation.
Can I ask a question there? You said Busby created this treaty. Was he not told from the City of London or wherever to write this? Because he would have been taking orders from somebody, yes?
Yes, absolutely, yes. But he was well-versed in Māori and he was the best translator at the time. So the point is this of jurisdiction. So this new Treaty of Waitangi jurisdiction, the corporate jurisdiction, could not come into power until they had lowered the royally proclaimed flag. And they knew that they could not touch the king's proclaimed flag. So they went about a deception.
Okay, now what is the king's flag? Because people are wanting to know about it.
Oh, for sure. Okay, so the flags that the Maori chiefs chose is a white background with a St. George cross on it, a red cross, and St. George killed the dragon. Now, in the upper left-hand quadrant is a second St. George cross with a black line around it. That black line is called a primbrae. It represents the monarch's protection upon the land. So we were an independent nation with the monarch's protection. Now, in each of those 4 upper quadrants of the upper St. George cross is a sky blue background with an 8-sided star within each of those 4 quadrants. And that flag is blueprinted, and that's the royally proclaimed chief's chosen flag. And that's the flag that rose on the 28th of October, 1835, that established us internationally as an independent nation answerable to nobody. Okay?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Now, for the corporation to seize power, they had to be able to lower that flag because it's all about jurisdiction. Now, they knew they couldn't touch the king's proclaimed flag, and so they went about creating what is called a de facto flag, basically a counterfeit flag. Point is, it's not the chief's chosen flag. It's not the proclaimed flag. It looks identical in every way, except it has a white primbrae, which is Admiralty law. It's upon the sea. And the stars are no longer eight-sided. They're now five pentagons. They're five-sided stars. So it's good enough to fool people, but in effect it might as well have been a flag with the face of Donald Duck on it. The point is it's not the official flag of New Zealand. It's not the flag that heralds the jurisdiction. So they had that up on a post, up on a flagpole, and they lowered that flag, pretending it to be New Zealand's sovereign flag. And when that flag was lowered, the Union Jack was risen, and they proclaimed that they now seized all the land of New Zealand, and that was the beginning of the Maori Land Wars.
Yes, and that's when huge tracts of land shifted from Maori to whoever had the finance.
Under the Australian Taurine Lands Dispersal System, yes, absolutely horrendous. But my point is, and the question that I'd put to all of your listeners, is can this new jurisdiction be lawful if a counterfeit flag is lowered and the original jurisdiction of King William IV proclaiming us to be an independent nation was not lowered, and indeed has never been lowered, and still flies at the Upper Marae? And the answer, internationally, under law, is no, cannot be. A counterfeit flag, you can lower anything you like, but you cannot usurp the original 1835 independence flag.
So you can't usurp that flag.
No.
Now, you said the Upper Marae. A lot of people overseas will be wondering what that all means.
What is that? In Waitangi, you have a Lower Marae and you have an Upper Marae. The Lower Marae is where the business and the debates go on, and once everything is agreed, the next day is the day of celebration, and that's at the Upper Marae.
Okay, and a marae, in many ways, is an area of meeting place where they come together for a hui.
Yes, it's a Maori meeting place. Yeah, it's where all the discussions and stuff go on. Yes,
yes, because Maori had a language that was oral.
Yes.
And so this is very important for them to be able to talk things through.
Yep.
And get an agreement.
Yeah.
And so this is where they,
yes,
whereas with the Europeans, they had a written language.
Yes.
And so Maori had to really talk it through to get an understanding.
It's eye to eye. You've got to be able to see the person's white of his eye, and you can determine whether they're lying or not. That's what it was about.
Very good. Now, can I just jump back a wee bit? Because I'm just wanting a little bit of clarity. I know that from what I can gather here that New Zealand was actually, very early, was also part of the colony of New South Wales in Australia.
Yes.
And
that's the Treaty of Waitangi. So the Treaty of Waitangi is done by a colonial house, and we were set up as a state of New South Wales under the corporate law, under the crown, under the Queen of Right. So we became a slave entity subservient to the crown or to colonial house, not the royal monarch.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to discuss something about the royal monarch. When a existing monarch dies and a new monarch ascends to the throne, they do not become recognised as the monarch until they have sworn their oath. It's called their coronation oath. Now, in Britain to do this, the throne is held up in Scotland and it comes down to England solely for the purpose of swearing in a new monarch. Now, the throne is an interesting little chair. It has a platform where the new monarch will place their bum, and underneath it is a shelf which holds an item called the Stone of Jacob. It goes back into the Bible. So when the monarch sits upon the chair and they swear their oath to uphold the faith, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's King James' version of the Bible.
Yes.
The monarch places, and in this case it was Queen Victoria that came after King William IV. So when the young Victoria swears her coronation oath, she places her hand on the Stone of Jacob, and thereby she swears her oath to uphold the faith, which is the King James Version, which makes each one of us a sovereign entity. So she is swearing to defend all within the domain. dominion, if you like. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
But we're not jurisdictionally under that system. We are an independent sovereign nation because the royally proclaimed flag was never lowered. They lowered a counterfeit, and that's the point. That was the con job. They created a de facto flag. Now, this is all evidenced in a complaint done by a very dear friend of mine, one Dilip Rupa. He's an Indian, for goodness sake, and his lineage is a Rajput. So this is a caste system within India. They're very big creatures. They're very strong, and their job was to uphold the truth. And primary of their functions was to defend the Maharaja. But their primary duty is to uphold the truth of God. Now, he's a New Zealand-born Indian, and it's through his information and his help that I have been able to discern all of this. And this con job has remained hidden for 180 years. No Maori, no European has come across it. It took a Rajput to put all this together.
Actually, his family goes right back into New Zealand as well, and they were fluent in Maori.
That's correct.
Thank
absolutely,
you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Amazing man. Now, I'd like to bring all of this to relevance to where we're sitting today. So, as you understand, the flag heralds the jurisdiction. We had a con job done with what is called the de facto flag, and people will say, prove it. Okay, well, actually, it has been proved. It's been proved by a complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Commission, I guess it's called, taken by Dilip Rupa, and they came back with an answer regarding the flags. And in that state-owned enterprises document, which is evidential in court, they go through all of the flags and they refer to the counterfeit flag as the de facto flag, a very polite way of saying a counterfeit flag, and they agree that that was the flag, not the royally proclaimed flag that was lowered for the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi and the raising of the Corporate Union Jack flag. So that con job has brought in a foreign colonising entity, which is the Colonial House, and we've been under that corporate rule as a slave entity, basically, ever since, for the last 180 years. They came in, they seized all the Maori land under the Torian land system, cut it all up, and then the Maori wars, the land wars, broke out with all of its absolute atrocities, and our independent governance was lost. Now, the corporation is all owned by foreign entities, and they have squeezed us for every penny, every bank that we've got, pretty much, apart from Kiwi Bank and Taranaki Savings Bank, are all owned by foreign entities, and we've been bled, dripped dry. So how are we enjoying it all, New Zealanders? Are you enjoying living under a corporate rule of a foreign corporation? How's that sitting for you? You've got lots of money in the bank, you're affluent from all of the efforts of your ancestors. You know, are we enjoying this at the moment, all of these lockdowns, etc.? I'd like to put it to you that where this goes is that when the current government is challenged to prove its jurisdiction, it fails to do so every time. This has been challenged more than three times now, and it cannot prove its jurisdiction because in actual fact, in law, it has none. Now, to this effect, one of the jobs that John Key had here...
Our recent Prime Minister, prior to the new Labour government getting into power...
...was to tidy up this flag issue. And that's why the first time ever a Prime Minister or a member of the Parliament instigated a citizens' referendum. It cost us a lot of money. I think it was $27 million or something by memory. Something
pretty close, yes, I agree.
Don't quote me on that. So for this flag issue, there was a flag referendum select committee where different members of the public and organisations could present their different concepts for a new New Zealand flag.
New designs, yes.
New designs, yeah, and tinny flag, etc. Now, Winston Peters from New Zealand First Party presented his option, and the current Prime Minister, by the way, was on that select committee board and was present at his presentation. Next one was done by the Return Services Association. Again, Jacinda Ardern was present at that presentation. Now, the next one was from one of her own constituents, Dilip Rupa, and he presented the United Tribes flag, the original flag of independence for New Zealand. And the chair would not, when it came to the end of his presentation, the chair closed the meeting, ordered all of the Fourth Estate, that's the press which is supposed to be upholding the correctness of procedure, out of the committee hearing room, cleared the room, closed the meeting, and the United Tribes flag, our flag of our Declaration of Independence, was deliberately withheld from being included in the people's choice, and it was never presented to the people to have a choice on, as was the next presenter after Dilip Rupa. That was also denied because the meeting was unlawfully closed by the chair. Okay, it's a huge point. That's a denial of our constitutional rights. They are there to serve us, the people. And she failed, deliberately stopping the choice of our independent flag.
So the chair was a female?
It was.
Okay. Right, next, please.
Okay, so in response to this, a petition was created, again by Dilip Rupa. And it was a petition to Her Majesty the Queen, the reigning monarch, Queen Elizabeth II. And it's a petition for a royal inquiry into the flag referendum process. So what happened was, in New Zealand, when the government reaches the end of its term, the House is closed and
adjourned,
and then it is dissolved, and there is a period of limbo where the matters of control are in the hands of the Governor-General. And the petition was presented to the Governor-General to present to Her Majesty the Queen. It's a jurisdictional issue, and that is the reason why the Governor-General is in her position to present to Her Majesty the Queen for her pleasure any issue that threatens the jurisdiction. And the Governor-General failed to do her duty to Her Majesty. This is actually, as I understand it, a treasonable offence. Now, then the people made their vote, the government came to power, a coalition was formed, and Jacinda Ardern became the Prime Minister. Now, Jacinda Ardern was also presented with the petition for the royal inquiry into the flag referendum process, and her and all of her ministers failed in their jurisdictional responsibilities to the master that they serve to inform her of the jurisdictional issues within this colony. So they have all failed in their jobs, and this is a very, very serious issue. You've got to ask yourself, if the flag referendum issue had no teeth, if the United Tribes flag wasn't an issue, why was it deliberately withheld? Why are they deliberately withholding this information from the Queen's pleasure? And the reason, of course, is they do not want to lose the power of their corporate government, which would be dissolved. Now, if and when that happens, because it is inevitable, because the truth always comes out, with the dissolution of this government, and the Queen can, with a snap of her fingers, just like that she did with the Whitlam government, she can dissolve any of her governments. Doesn't matter whether you're New Zealand First or Smoke Marijuana Party, you can be whoever you want. You, when you come to power, you only get power by going to swear allegiance to the Queen through the Governor-General. If you don't do that, you do not enter Parliament.
And the Governor-General is the Queen's representative in New Zealand.
That's right. So we're a second fiddle. The Queen calls the shots. And whatever government comes to power have to present a business plan on a yearly basis and monthly reporting that is visible on the United States Securities Exchange by any member of the public. Anyone can go and view it.
The United States Securities Exchange, can you explain a little bit more, please?
Well, I don't know much about it. I have gone in and had a look. I don't know what that organisation is, but that's where governments of the colonies report and present their business plan to the Queen. So, for instance, the last financial crash, if you go and have a look at the year prior, the crash is in the plan.
Okay, right. So what are we in New Zealand to do?
Okay, well,
peacefully.
Okay, well, peacefully, what this petition that Dilip Rupa has created for a royal inquiry into the flag referendum issue is that it establishes that the government is unconstitutional because the flag that they are purporting their jurisdiction was raised with a counterfeit flag being lowered. So they do not have the jurisdiction. Our jurisdiction actually is and always has been and remains the United Tribes flag. We are an independent nation. We should not and should never have been kowtowing to a foreign power. We've been squeezed ruthless. Now it's time for the Queen to uphold her faith, her sworn oath on her coronation, to protect us and remove this government from power.
When you say remove this government from power, it doesn't matter what government is in power at the moment. Had this been 5 years ago, it would have removed the national government.
Absolutely right. It's at the Queen's pleasure. We only exist under the system, this false system which we are in at the moment. The Queen has the power to remove any government that she has control of, as she did with the Whitlam government in Australia.
And that was 1975, and Sir John Kerr was the Australian Governor-General.
Exactly.
Good. Okay, so let's take the next step.
All of what I've been talking about has been evidenced over a very long period. So in terms of the evidence of the con job with the lowering of a counterfeit flag, this is all evidenced through state-owned enterprise TVNZ as a response to a complaint made again by Dilip Rupa to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. This is amazing stuff, absolutely. Now, Dilip has also contested things in court. One of them was over the water rates issue, Penny Bright, if you remember that. It's the rights of the council to charge water rates. So many people refused to pay the water rates.
This is in Auckland, wasn't it?
It's in Auckland. So there was a statement made by the Crown that Auckland's birthday was on a particular date. Now, when you backtrack that, it means that the Auckland City Council was created 1 week before the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. That just doesn't wash.
And Auckland anniversary weekend is always around about a week in advance of Waitangi, and it's usually at the end of January.
So what Dilip Rupa was saying, happy to pay my water rates, under which jurisdiction, who do I pay it to? Could you please prove and validate your jurisdiction? And of course they can't. So we're in a conundrum. This is a jurisdictional issue. The reigning sovereign monarch does need to be notified, and they're withholding this information from her so that they can hold on to power. So that's a bit of a concern to all of us, I would imagine, especially with the lockdowns that we are in, the pending ones that we're scared of coming, and all of the associated issues that are threatening all of our lives, our businesses, our health, our families, our future. And this can all be brought to an immediate halt at the Queen's pleasure, and it can be investigated quite easily and legally, peacefully, lawfully. Beautiful. I love it. And the tool that's been given us to do it is the deception of the corporation in the very first instance. They've shot themselves in the foot. Absolutely astounding the way this all just divinely works out. I just can't believe it's just amazing to watch this happen.
I'm speaking with Dan Hermanson, and he is a researcher. So, in other words, you could also call it a false flag.
It is a false flag. May as well be a picture of Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse. But it fooled the people and has fooled everyone up until today.
Okay. So, again, we've got many people out there listening at this moment, and they're just wanting to know, what is the case now? Because we still have to have people driving on the right side of the road. We still have to fulfil, shall we say, society's dictates.
Well, yes. Okay, so the situation we're at the moment, if you have a look at all the presentation that Jacinda Ardern does on TV, you'll see the fobs are hanging there with the flag. So this indicates now that we are under martial law due to what the CDC themselves classify as a mild flu that we know as the deadly pandemic of COVID-19 hype, or as Trump would say, the scamdemic. And she has her Emergency Powers Act. So one of those 15 laws that Jacinda, without any cabinet approval, brought in, without any cabinet approval or public consultation, was the ability for the police to enter your premises at any time. If anybody coughs, without even any testing of COVID, they can remove the baby from the mother's breast, take it to a separate quarantine facility, remove the wife, remove the husband, break the family up, etc., etc. And that's just one of the 15 laws. And we've got even more draconian laws coming in imminently. So this is important that this is addressed for the safety of all of us.
The flag that we've got, a prime minister has a flag that's got yellow tassels.
Yes. It's called fobs.
Fobs.
So that indicates we're under martial law. And we are. We're under martial law at the moment. So with the dissolution of government that happens next Wednesday.
So, Dan, this is all part of the coming election process.
Yes, exactly. Standard. Then what happens is we're in a period of limbo, and during that process we're under martial law, and the Emergency Powers Act is an act, and the Minister of Health basically has the reins and he can do whatever he wants, and he has just been given tremendous increased power at a whim without any consultation from any input of any public at all.
When you say next Wednesday, this is in about 7 days' time.
Parliament has risen. So there is no more members in the House, but they are still MPs until next Wednesday, and that's when Parliament is dissolved. Then there is a period of limbo, and the Governor General is the one that holds the reins until and she then gives out the information for confirming when the new election will be held and a whole lot of rules, etc., etc. And after that, the candidates continue their campaign, and after the election, a new government is formed. But until that new government is formed, it's the Governor General that is in charge of New Zealand.
I didn't know that.
That's okay. Most of us don't. Okay, what I'd like to try and get across is that everybody is subservient. There's a headspace in New Zealand. We all are like sheep. We have to do as we say. Go and lock yourself in the house. Wear your mask, etc., etc. We're all subservient to authority. Now, what the paradigm shift that we all have to realise is that we are the sovereign authority. They are servants of us, that we empower them. They are paid by us.
You're a member of parliament, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Whatever government is in power, we empower them. We are the sovereign entities. Okay? So they have to be answerable to us. And we go, oh, you know, please, if you don't mind, could you, blah, blah, and, oh, I object to this. No. It's the other foot. The foot has to be the glove in the other hand, if you like. They have to be answerable to us. They have to be accountable. They are public servants. They are our representatives. They are our elected representatives to look after and protect our rights. We have rights, and they are trampling upon them. They need to be held accountable. Okay? We look to them as if they are gods and our prison masters, whereas in actual fact, we are the masters. They are our servants. They are to look after our interests. Don't quite know how to say it, but there is a paradigm shift here that we need to get New Zealanders to understand. We are the sovereign entities.
I totally agree, Dan. Well, there's a lot of work for New Zealanders to do. We've got to make some deep assessments. They've got to take in this information and work it out, connect the dots. And it's interesting, I know many people up and down New Zealand are looking at this issue, and they are studiously endeavouring to untangle everything and get a good insight. And the Māori United Tribes flag is the one. They know that it's there, but they still haven't been able to, believe it or not, connect all the dots to have a real coherent story, which you're endeavouring to do.
Yes, the Maori, they haven't figured out how the con was done. They don't realise that we're still under the original jurisdiction. And they are into the United Tribes flag, and they're setting up their own governments, their own way of doing things, and it's getting rather heated. I was talking to a descendant of the Paramount chief, and a lot of dissension amongst the Maori. It's getting to a very dangerous level. Most people don't realise that, but the Maori are not happy.
Yes, well, I didn't want to hear that, because I would have thought that Aroha is still a predominant feeling, bearing in mind, since 1840, there's a lot of injustice that's been happened. Because, I mean, when we go to Te Whiti o Rongomai, who, way back in the early 1880s, about 1,600 troops invaded the western Taranaki settlement of Parihaka.
Right.
And Parihaka still symbolises peaceful resistance to the confiscation of Maori lands even today. And the story was all of Te Whiti's followers, plus his other friend Tohu Kakahi, used passive resistance methods to be able to occupy their land. And, I mean, I couldn't believe 1,600 troops showing up. This is terrible. And he was sent to trial in New Plymouth under the charge for wickedly, maliciously and seditiously contriving and intending to disturb the peace.
Even though there was no whites there.
That's right.
I know.
There's so few. He was just wanting to get back to square one and live in a whānau, extended one, in their hapū, in their tribe. So that's that one there. And again, they didn't even do a decent trial of him here because essentially he was denied a trial. Yet Te Whiti's status as a teacher and a prophet was enhanced by his knowledge of Christian doctrines. He read the Bible, which Maori had learned from Pākehā. And it's been said that Mahatma Gandhi heard about how Te Whiti was doing peaceful things and followed suit. And then we have Rua, Ruakanana Ahipitipa. And he was a Māori prophet. And he was down there, essentially, in the Tūhoe country. And he was a very important person, too. And this is a different time, because it was around about 1900 that he went to this particular area, Maunga Pohatu. And he wanted to have his land there, but he couldn't do it. He called it New Jerusalem, to be perfectly frank.
That's right.
It was a farming cooperative and his own savings bank.
Yeah.
And you see, he was classified as a disruptive influence in 1916, whilst all the New Zealand troops were fighting and being slaughtered over in Gallipoli and also in Western Europe. The New Zealand government in April sent a 70-strong, heavily armed police party. They came in and they arrested him for sedition. And he was found not guilty on that charge, but imprisoned for resisting arrest. Hmm. Interesting, isn't it, how it works? So here we are. There are two examples of Maori wanting to express their own feelings that they thought they could have under the original flag, but under the 1840 Treaty of Waitangi, they had all their sovereignty
stripped.
Yes.
Absolutely stripped. But those are historical injustices. There's injustices going on right today. There's land grabs going on. There's tribal land that's being seized. There's huge issues with coastal and foreshore. Now, an interesting under the Torrens system, there has to be an existing title before land can be sold. If there is no existing title, the land cannot be sold. So all of this new foreshore and seabed issue, there is no existing, pre-existing title. So it brings up huge problems. Just talking with the descendant of the Paramount chief yesterday, and he was talking about $1.89 billion of land had just been seized by the government now. This is the current government doing this. There's so much going on. These atrocities are not just historical. These grievances are being brought into existence right now, this very minute, and it continues. We've got to do something to bring a balance into this. We've got to try and return it back to the truth of the matter. And we've got to stop this corporate grab.
Yeah, this is very important. So Where to next?
Where to next?
Yes.
Well, what we do is very simple. We have... I can't say too much about this because I want to keep this on the flag issue. I don't want to make this a political
comment. I think this is wise.
And I can't talk too much about that. But we have a process in place whereby the sovereign monarch will finally be presented with the petition over the flag referendum. And when that happens, then because of her sworn oath... She, regardless of what anybody believes or knows her to be, she is under that oath. And if she does not uphold that oath, then she's gone. She only has power because of that coronation oath. So she must uphold that. And she must uphold it in the world's eye. So this is now not just a New Zealand issue. This is an international issue. And all of the eyes of the whole world will be on us. And we can save the day.
I'm hearing there's also groups in Canada.
Yes.
And also in Australia.
Yes.
And no doubt any British, should we say, colony or ex-colony,
yes,
there are people looking at it. And there's all sorts, yes, of interesting things here. It's how, even to the degree of how you write your name. Some say are using capital letters.
Yes, and that's
others,
a corporate trick.
That's right. And then the other way is to do it in lowercase.
No, that's a corporate trick too. All uppercase is your corporate identity. You have two identities, but and all lowercase likewise is the corporate trick. Your name should be in proper noun. It should be a capital for the beginning of your first name, a capital for your surname. Everything else is lowercase. That is you, the biologic identity. It is your signature, the way in which you would sign your name. Just as a side, you'll notice that on all tombstones, the names are all in uppercase. It's a corpse. All uppercases, you are agreeing to corporate law. If someone addresses you as Mr., I don't know, Dan Hermanson, Mr. Dan Hermanson, and I say yes, then I have agreed to be tried under Admiralty law because Mr. is the lowest denomination within the Navy. So you are not a Mr. Unless you have served in the Navy, you are not a Mr. You are Dan Hermanson or whatever your name is. So there's lots of tricks that they use, but you should never, ever, ever assign anything in all upper caps or represent yourself all in upper caps because you're entering into a very, very dangerous minefield. Very dangerous. You're a sovereign entity, period.
Sorry, Admiralty law, I mean, just quickly, because we've only got so many minutes.
You have a law for the land, civil law. You have a law for the sea, Admiralty law. They're two different law systems, and they're heralded by, well, for instance, on the Chief's Chosen flag, we were talking before about the black primbre around the upper St. George's Cross. That represents the, even though we're an independent sovereign nation, that represents the British reigning monarch's protection on land. If the primbre is white, then it is the protection on the sea. So that's an Admiralty flag. Sometimes you'll see, like in America, there'll be a fringe around the entire flag. That means that it's a flag of no nation. So flags are incredibly complex. It's a whole study in its own field, and I am by no means an expert. But we in New Zealand are in a unique and critically gifted position whereby we were set up as an independent nation. We were fooled. We've taken it for all of this time. But the reality is we're still an independent sovereign nation in terms of our jurisdiction. And that's the trouble that the government has. That's why they do not want and have gone to all of these measures to withhold that petition for the Royal Inquiry over the flag referendum, because it shows that the government has no jurisdiction. You don't need to pay your water rates. The whole thing's a scam. The whole thing's a scam. I don't want to go into this too deep because I'm going to be getting into very dangerous area.
Deep water.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the deep water is really interesting. Last week's interview, we found out that water, you can pump water out of your land and it's free. And we didn't know about this. And when people find out about water rates, they're not paying for the water, they're paying for the infrastructure.
That's right.
And there's
but you do that twice. You pay for the water you get, and then you pay for it again when you flush it down the toilet. Now, that wasn't always the case. In the old days, when you had just rates, that included all of that. And that was all set up by our forefathers. All of that infrastructure we've already paid for with our bodies and our blood and our sweat and our tears.
Okay, I'm going to cut back way back to just after 1840 when the British flag, the Union Jack, was up there.
Yep.
Because there's no real time. The New Zealand flag, what we've got now with four stars, yes, yep, that didn't come until around about 1902, yep, just after the Boer War.
That's right. That's a whole other scam as well.
Yeah, there's some very profound incongruencies.
Mm. So all of the veterans that fought in the Boer War were never recognised, and that was because of the Boer War flag. So all of those stars on the flag at that time were five-sided. So they're not recognised in anything. But most countries have got a flag-raising day. New Zealand does not. India's got a flag-raising day. On and it goes, America, etc. We don't have a flag-raising day. Our true flag-raising day is the 28th of October, 1835.
And that's right. We've only got Waitangi Day as the only sort of New Zealand day, whereas I've been in Australia many times. I even walked in a real parade on the 26th of January in Brisbane in Queensland because we had a big function that day. And I was invited to participate in it.
Mm.
And so they acknowledge their day. We don't in New Zealand. And so I think that's very important.
One thing that I would like to ask is King Itawara, he fought for this flag referendum petition. And he signed it and personally endorsed it and presented it, and it went nowhere to the Governor-General. Now, his daughter, Nolene Tauera, she's just, you know who I'm talking about, she's got damed for her efforts in bringing the netball team to the win, etc. So she's now a dame, so it would be lovely if she would go and talk to the Governor-General who damed her and ask her what was the reason why the petition her father has fought his whole life for was never gifted, handed over to Her Majesty. So it would be lovely if she could request that that be done, even at this late hour.
Yes.
It would be nice to find out from her what her response would be.
Very much so.
Mm.
That's good. Okay, so that we don't actually really know. There's no real date where New Zealand became sort of independent of its colony status. And this is where the grey area comes in, because there's no celebration of that. And
we,
I think
we never were. See,
yeah.
The colonisation is a trick.
Yeah.
We were never colonised. We were always and still are an independent sovereign nation. The de facto, the con flag, is what has brought all of this misery about. So we just need to return to the fact that we are an independent sovereign nation, and we have to challenge the councils and the government to prove their jurisdiction, and that's the trouble. They can't.
And we also have, please people, if you have a recent passport, I want you to be able to go and get it. Open it up to the back, inside back cover, and you will see a map of Aotearoa, New Zealand. There is the North Island, the South Island, and Stewart Island, and stamped right in the middle of Te Ika o Māui, the North Island, is NZ.
But not in the South Island.
That's right. This is a peculiarity that I would like us to be able to talk about, because, again, there are so many things that are incongruent with what we would call a whole country.
Mm.
And there is separation and fragmentation in certain places that we need to address and have our elected representatives.
There is so much deception. There is so much hidden. It is just a minefield. I'd like very much to ask a question of all New Zealanders. When the illegitimate current government is exposed as a fraud, what happens to all of the debts our corporate government has incurred? As they are the debts of the corporation, do these debts disappear with their demise and leave us debt-free? And do all of their deals with the likes of Bill Gates, re-5G and COVID and lockdown become null and void also? I'd love to get an answer to that.
It is a minefield, and this is why I think You said there's a lot of Māori who are endeavouring to work it all out. I mean, I know a number of Pākehā as well, endeavouring to essentially decode what this is all about. And we need this. We need this for a new look at life.
Aotearoa, absolutely. Now, the Māori have already taken it a step further. They're already setting up their own sovereign governments. They're all doing this behind their backs, and it's getting to a state where they can see mass disobedience happening in here in New Zealand.
Yes. Regrettably, I can understand that there are so many people who are disempowered and struggling financially and unhappy. And
absolutely, Tim. Time for some transparency and some accountability.
It's not been addressed. It's not been addressed properly.
I was talking to a descendant of the Paramount chief, and they've just had $1.89 billion worth of land confiscated from them. And this isn't ancient historical stuff. This is last week.
Quickly, whereabouts was that?
That's South Island.
That's in South Island. Mm-hmm. Well, what we need, and the Māori carried one wonderful, wonderful expression, and that was aroha.
Oh, beautiful.
Aroha. And we have to go with that.
Yes.
That's the only thing that we at Green Planet FM here.
Beautiful.
This is our expression. We have to learn conflict resolution. We have to find ways to be able to reconcile opposing points of view. And in the spirit of aroha, that can be done, but we have to have the will.
That's right. Absolutely. And I'd like to point out that the original way in which we were set up with the indigenous people being given sole rights for our rule, everyone that's born in New Zealand now, we are the indigenous people, every one of us, Chinese, Indian, Pākehā, Nauean, everyone that's been born in New Zealand, we are the indigenous people, and it's time for us to take back our sovereignty.
And come back to being living like a human being on a planet.
That's right, caring for each other. It's a New Zealand thing. You fall down, you pick them up. You care for your brother. You look after your whānau. Get to know each other. Talk.
Agreed. Excellent. Hey, well, Dan, cheers, brother. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Let's see how New Zealand, Aotearoa, the peoples come together.
Yes.
And we hongi for the future of the nation.
Yes, we should come together as a united people and say bye-bye to the corporate governments.
This was fantastic, Dan. Wonderful. Excellent. I'm really pleased.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Lovely to see you.
That was researcher Dan Hermanson. Dear people, had a big day today, and all I'm wanting to do is just mention that Dan said Pentagon when it needed to have been Pentagram in relationship to the counterfeit flag. We've been just very busy, so just letting you know. A little postscript. Hone Heke was an influential Māori voice in favour of the Treaty of Waitangi and was the first Māori chief to sign the treaty in 1840. Later, however, Hone Heke became a leading opponent of British rule in New Zealand. In 1844, he led a revolt against the British by chopping down their flagpole, the most fundamental symbol of authority. Despite new flagpoles and more guards, Hone Heke chopped down the pole three more times. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook. To tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it. Spread it. Radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world. And become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM, and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch, in the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say kia kaha and haere ra. And don't forget, keep your inner candle burning strongly.